Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site and fm1032.com.au.
Where is God when it hurts? What's so amazing about grace? Disappointment with God, the Jesus I never knew, rumours of another world, prayer, does it make any difference? I could go on and on and on, because this man sits in his little den tapping out books that inspire millions, and it's probably no exaggeration. His name is Philip Yancey, and it's a privilege to welcome you right here in the studio, Philip.
Thank you very much, Aaron.
Welcome again to Australia.
Well, I think this is my fifth trip. I added them up, and I think this is number five.
You say that with a very interesting intonation there.
That's a long way.
That's a long way.
We just got here a couple of days ago. I was talking to one of the audiences the other night, and I said, you lose a day. We left on Tuesday and got here on Thursday. Wednesday on my Outlook calendar just disappeared, didn't exist. So far I've lost 5 days of my life just by visiting Australia. Yes. And it never feels like you gain them back when you go the other direction either.
So there's a good side to that. I don't know who it was, but it was an American who actually said, if the world comes to an end, don't worry, because it's already tomorrow in Australia.
Ah, that's good.
So, yeah. All right. Last time we spoke, because we're very privileged, this is the second time you've joined us in Open House this year. Right. Last time we spoke, we were talking about your brand new book, Prayer, Does It Make Any Difference?
Mm-hmm.
And you made an interesting comment towards the end there of the interview, because I asked you what the next book would be about. And you said, well, for the first time in my life, I don't know what I'm going to talk about next.
Yeah.
Have you had any ideas since?
I think I'm going to do a kind of a memoir. I want to try a different kind of writing. I've done these heavily researched essay subject type books for the last, oh my goodness, 25, 30 years. And I've covered those big questions that were floating around in my mind. Not that I've answered them, but at least I've explored them. And I want to do something different. I have talked about my own background here and there in my books, but there are a lot of stories I haven't told. And there are some challenges that I still face, because I'm going to be telling the truth. I'm going to be talking about actual people, some of whom are still living, and they know lawyers, and you know, and I don't know exactly what I'm going to be getting into, but I think I want to try that.
Mm. All right. Look forward to it. Any working title yet?
Not really. I'm just trying to remember what has happened in my life so far, and it's probably going to be about a 3-year project. I project it'll take that long.
Okay. Where is God when Yancey finds amazing grace about rumors of another world and prays about it?
Yeah. I had a funny experience one time. We had some friends who came skiing. A lot of people stopped by Colorado. And these folks happened to bring a Polish nanny with them to take care of their kids while they went skiing. She came down, was interested in my office and what I do all day. I said, well, I write books. Oh, that's very interesting. Have you ever written a book that was translated into Polish? I said, well, I think so. And I went over to a shelf of foreign books and looked for one that had a lot of CZWX type letters in it, you know, a lot of consonants. I said, what about this one? Is this one Polish? Yes, yes. She got very excited. Well, what does it say? It says, disappointment with mold. And I said, are you sure that's what it says? And she said, oh, no. You see, the word for mold is boje. The word for God is boze. It's actually disappointment with God. Well, I went back and retitled my books. You've mentioned a couple of them. I wrote a book early on the history of penicillin called Where is Mold When It Hurts? And then the bacteria develop resistance. So I wrote a sequel called Disappointment with Mold. Teamed up with a doctor, wrote a book called Fearfully and Wonderfully Mold. And then not long ago wrote a guide to cleaning your refrigerator called Finding Mold in Unexpected Places.
Exactly. We're talking with Philip Yancey, and look, we'll open up the lines. If you've got a question for Philip Yancey, 1-300-40-2020, you can call through, and here's your opportunity. Where is God when it hurts? I mean, it's probably been the biggest book, apart from maybe amazing, what's so amazing about grace, and probably prayer, does it make any difference? We'll probably jump over both of them. You were 27 or something when you wrote that book?
I was, and I had no right to tackle the problem of pain, this daunting problem that philosophers and all sorts of people have grappled with over the centuries. On the other hand, I had to. I write books because I can't stop thinking about something, and I need to find a way through the thicket, through the jungle. And I had been doing a series of articles. I was working as a journalist. I did a series of articles for Reader's Digest magazine. The drama in real life stories. You know, these blood and gut stories of being attacked by a grizzly bear in our country or crocodile in your country or stuck in a blizzard. And as I interviewed people, I asked them, these were primarily Christians, and I asked them, how did the church respond? Very often they would say, well, the church actually made it worse. Because I was lying in a hospital bed, trying to recover, trying to get some energy, strength. And Christians would come in with a variety of little pat answers. Oh, well, you must have done something wrong. God is punishing you. No, it's not God. It's the devil, Satan. Well, it's not really Satan. It's God, but he's chosen you especially to demonstrate you know, those kinds of answers. And I would hear these stories, and I wouldn't know what to say to people like that. So when I don't know what to say, I write a book about it. And writing a book gives me the chance to spend a long time gleaning from others, interviewing, reflecting, and looking at the Bible, and just trying to find my way through that question.
Producing, in the end, a document that in the end that helps quite a lot of people. But 27 years of age to, I guess, come out with fairly lofty thoughts. I mean, to some degree, that book's 30-odd years old now.
It is 30 years, yeah.
And the thoughts still stand. Would you describe yourself back then as an old soul in a young body?
Good question. I had the assignment after the book had been out about 20 years, I think, so 10 years ago, of going back and revising it. And it's an interesting thing to do, to pick up something that at that point was 20 years removed in time. I could remember writing it. I could remember sentences, but my own style had changed. And I had learned a lot over the years. So I went through and added a lot, but I tried to keep the basic structure and the basic material as much as possible. That was quite instructive. I guess when I went over it, I felt like I was a young soul in a young body, because I kept thinking, what right did you have to come up with that 20 years ago? But there is kind of a brashness to age. And frankly, when I'm around young people, they keep me fresh, because they voice the questions that we kind of wish would go away. You know, a lot of young people will try to pin me down on something. What kind of car would Jesus drive? Well, nobody can figure that out, but it's a good question. And they'll pin you down on an issue that the rest of us old folks just want to ignore.
Mm. Were you always an inquisitive child?
I was, but I was in a church that had no room for inquisitiveness. If you doubted, if you questioned, you sinned. You know, there's something wrong with you. And I learned to conform. You really had to conform in a church like that. But at the same time, those deep doubts, those deep questions didn't really get answered in a satisfactory way. The danger of a church like that, of course, and there are still churches like that, even in Australia, I know, is that you don't really silence or solve the doubts by denying them, by saying, don't doubt, just believe. And later I found that God seems to have a lot more tolerance for doubts and questions than we do. The Bible is full of them. The Bible is full of flawed people who doubt. And when I go to college campuses, for example, I'll challenge the philosophy students. I'll say, I dare you to find a single argument against God in the great agnostics, people like Bertrand Russell or Voltaire, or now it would be Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, people like that, that isn't already in the Bible, in Job, Jeremiah, Habakkuk. And they'll mention something, I'll say, well, here it is, you know. I have respect. You have the freedom, I tell them, to reject God, to disbelieve in God. We have the freedom to crucify the Son of God. We, you know, people exercise that freedom. But I personally have respect for a God who not only allows us the doubt, but gives us the material we can use to doubt him. I mean, that's a pretty doubt-tolerant God, actually. And I learned that inquisition, or inquisitiveness, rather, and questioning is an inevitable part of the life of faith. If it was certainty, there would be no room for faith. Mm. So there is always an element of uncertainty. And I encourage people to not to doubt alone, you know, to find some people who are safe to doubt with, and to doubt their doubts as much as their faith, but don't try to deny it. Don't feel guilty about it, because a lot of people have been that path before.
Mm. This is Open House, and we are talking to author Philip Yancey. I'll open up the lines now for calls, 1-300-40-2020. If you've got a question for Philip, come and join us. Make it a good one. I think you're going to get a pretty interesting answer too. Maybe something to get you thinking. 1-300-40-2020. Back in a sec. This is Open House. This is Open House, and we're enjoying an extended chat with author Philip Yancey, and he's got so many books under his name. 28, 29 books?
Oh, not quite that many, maybe 22 or 3.
Oh, that's all right, yeah. Okay. I know an author, actually, who says, I will not count the amount of books that I've written so that I don't fall into pride. I'd like to be in that situation, that's for sure. Now, today's Father's Day.
Mm.
And I don't know, Father's Day, same day in Australia as it is in the US?
It's not. We had our Father's Day sometime around mid-June.
Okay, right. Now, I know that from your story, your history, your dad passed away when you were about 1 year old.
Just 1 year old,
okay.
Right.
As mm-hmm. a result of you being in what sounds like, and you've talked about this before, a fairly toxic church mm. with a bunch of elders who said basically, or suggested that he come off life support mm. and believe that God would heal him.
Right. This was during the days of the great polio epidemics. I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember those days. When polio was every bit as feared as a disease like AIDS is now. We didn't know where it came from. Swimming pools were closed. Sometimes schools were closed. And I think at least 1 year, 50,000 people in the United States died, if I recall. So serious epidemic. And my father was 24 years old, young man, planning to be a missionary in Africa. And he came down with polio, was in an iron lung. Group of Christians gathered around him, and they could not imagine that it would be God's will for a person with wanting to be a missionary to die at that age. So together, and with his complicity, he was removed from the iron lung, and ironically he had a remarkable recovery for a few days. He actually went from being totally paralyzed to having a good bit of movement restored. But then within a couple of weeks, he died. Mm. And my mother, I don't know about the others, I was only a year old, but my mother, of course, was scarred by that experience for life. And interesting, the first book I did write was on that whole issue, Where Is God When It Hurts, The Problem of Pain. Because I learned early on through that experience that what you believe makes a huge difference. Theology makes a big difference. Mm. In this case, they believed they knew God's will, and they were wrong. And so it's important to know what you believe and to have those beliefs straight. The yeah. church I grew up in made a lot of mistakes like that.
Yeah. What was it like then? And how do you think not having a dad throughout all of those essential years, you know, the childhood years, the teenage years, how did that affect, one, you as a person, two, your understanding of God?
Well, as I told you, I'm going to be writing a memoir, so I'll be trying to figure that one out.
We're trying to get a sneak peek now.
like any child, when you grow up, you think this is normal. You can't imagine any other life. So I couldn't imagine having a father. Men were scary to me. My mother would use them as threats. I'm going to get so-and-so to come over here and blister your behind, you know. Right. And so God did a very great thing. After I was an adult, he gave me a substitute father. It was a gentleman who has affected my faith more than anybody else, Dr. Paul Brand. We ended up writing 3 books together, mm-hmm. and he was just a great, great man. I was privileged to have that time to spend with him at a time when my own faith was up in the air in a lot of ways. I was distrustful. I had been burned by the church. And then here was a person, it's as if God kind of smiled and said, Philip, you've seen the worst the church has to offer. I'm going to show you the best. Here's Paul Brand. Mm-hmm. Follow him around, analyze him, write up his life story. And he stood up to scrutiny. And it only takes one person like that who is really transformed by God to make you think there must be something there. Mm. And I got to know him as well as you can get to know a person. That was my job for 10 years, following him around. And he really changed my life in a lot of ways.
Beautiful story. Lots of calls ready for you. Would you like to take some?
Sure.
Okay, Brian's in Canberra. Hi, Brian.
G'day, how are you going?
Doing very well. Your question for Philip.
G'day, Philip. How are you going?
Just fine, Brian.
Oh, great. Philip, I'm a writer myself.
Good job.
I only write short stories, sort of fictional-based short stories.
Uh-huh.
And the question that I wanted to ask you is, what do you do when you get a brain meltdown, when you just can't create?
Let's see. That would be every day. No. I had the advantage, Brian, of starting as a magazine editor. And I learned not ever to sit around and wait on inspiration. So I would just go to my job and just keep plugging away. And I learned, especially for me, I don't know what it's like for you, but for me, that hits on the first draft. Once I get something down on paper, I can always go back and find a way to make it a little better, or at least find out what's wrong with it so I can start tinkering. But when I'm sitting there with a blank page or a blank computer screen and there's nothing on it, boy, that's when I hit that wall that you describe. So I've learned to do what I call a guilt-free draft. And I just force myself to keep typing, even though it just sounds like drivel. And even though I'm getting all these voices in my head saying, this is terrible, this is such a cliche, you've already said this, this is boring. But force myself to keep going. Before I do that draft, I spend a lot of time preparation, even outlining. Sometimes my outlines are as long as the chapters I write. And you could say, well, that's probably a way of avoiding writing. And well, maybe it is. But it helps me with that mental block because at least I've got something on paper. Of course, you're writing stories, so it would be a plot rather than an outline. But I got something on paper to follow. And if I'm committed to that guilt-free draft, I'm just going to keep putting words down no matter how bad they sound. Then I can usually get through that day. And the next day when I take a look at it, it's almost never as bad as I felt during that day.
Great. Thanks for your call, Brian. That's a great question. I think there's a few people that are wanting to know that too. Jonathan's in Greensboro. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks. You. Your question for Phil?
Yeah, you say this a bit in your book, What's So Amazing About Grace, but I was wondering how Christians can love gay people.
What's so amazing about grace? Well, I've learned that it really doesn't take grace to love someone who's just like me, who agrees with me, who sees the world the same way I do. The really testing point for grace, where the rubber meets the road, is when we're around people who are very different than we are. And to me, that's one of the great distinctives and the great challenges of Christianity. Jesus said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And I talked in that book and then in some other books about my friendship with Mel White. There's a whole chapter in there. He was my friend long before I knew that he had a secret life. And eventually he came out quite openly as a gay person and even a gay activist. And sometimes I turn that question around when people say, how can you love somebody like your friend, Mel? I say, really, isn't it my job to ask how can Mel love somebody like me? Because I'm a sinner too. I'm full of pride and temptation and greed. And it's easy to rank sins. It's easy to say, well, this sin is a lot worse than that sin. Well, boy, the Bible doesn't seem to do that. Whenever it mentions sexual sins, it also mentions things like pride, envy, disobedience to parents even. So I think that ranking of sins where we say, how can you love this kind of person? I don't see that in the Bible. I see instead that we all fail in different ways. A person who works with gay people, he would say that he's an ex-gay person, got married and feels that his orientation really changed. But he still has a lot of compassion and sympathy for gay people, and he runs an AIDS ministry. He said to me one time, what I learned is that Christians get very angry at other Christians who sin differently than they do. And I think that's a pretty thoughtful question. And it's not so much a question of whether we sin or not. We do. Some sin differently. And I try to put myself in their place and see myself through their eyes rather than vice versa.
1-300-40-2020 if you've got a question for author Philip Yancey. Vivian is in Sydney. Hello, Vivian.
Hi.
You've got a war-related question for Philip.
I was just pondering that question. Christians in war. I was talking to a guy that was involved in the artillery in Vietnam, and I was trying to tell him the gospel, and I just had nothing to say to him when he saw when he told me that, you know, God isn't there. He said, it's very hard to be a Christian when you've seen what I have seen.
Hmm.
And, you know, I've been through the Bible and I've asked people about it, and I just find it really hard to kind of grasp. And, you know, in the whole realm that we are in today, with all the wars in Iraq and things like that, you know, is God really kind of, does God really have a place there, or, yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's a great question, and Christians have differed over the centuries on that issue. There are whole denominations that are peace denominations, Mennonites, Quakers, some Brethren denominations, who would say that all wars are wrong, always wrong, and that a Christian should not ever serve in the armed forces. Probably more Christians throughout history have concluded a little differently. They would say, well, all wars are very sad and very terrible, but sometimes when you've got evil that is wreaking terrible things on other people, on innocent people, force is necessary. And of course, the illustration of Hitler often comes up, or Christians, a lot of Christians today are saying in Darfur, well, we need to put some force in there. You've got evil people who are killing and raping and oppressing people. And the classic Christian position by the majority of Christians is called the just war theory. And there are rules that they say that, you know, there has to be some sort of invasion, there has to be some sort of obvious provocation, that the force that's applied can't be worse than the cause. Mm. And, you know, there are, I would suggest, you might want to just spend some time on the internet and just type in something like just war and see the debate that goes on. I don't think there is an easy answer, and I don't think the Bible gives an absolute black and white answer. Otherwise, we wouldn't have those disagreements over the years. But I think it's a... But your friend in Vietnam, is your friend Australian or American?
He's Australian.
Aha, uh-huh. Yes. Okay.
Well, he's not my friend. I just got talking to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the Kitty Hawk was over here,
uh-huh.
We were going past.
Because to some degree, Vivian, it sounded like his was an issue of faith. Because of all of the evil that he was seeing, there couldn't possibly be a God because of all of this war. Is that right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, it's funny how God gets blamed for a lot of things that actually we humans are doing to each other, isn't it? Mm. You know, we spoil the earth and have unjust economic systems, and then we ask God, why are there poor people? You know, why do you put up with so much poverty, and why didn't you give us more resources? Well, we just wasted them all. You know? So, especially on, if you look at history, a lot of the wars are from the worst of motives, just plain greed and power grabbing, and to turn that as a question to God, how can you possibly allow this?
Yeah.
Boy, it's just easy to blame God for
things. I'm not asking how can you allow this,
mm-hmm.
but how can you talk to people about this in a way that they will understand?
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard because there are deeper issues in that there's a matter of faith, and, you know, they have to denounce their feelings of, you know, hatred towards God because of what has happened or the situations that they are in.
Yeah. So many of those questions, for me, I find that questions I have of God, God tends to throw back to me. And so a lot of the questions, you know, why are there poor people, things like that, why is there war, are really questions that God throws back to me. Oh, yeah, you answer that. What are you doing about it? And I think we as Christians should wrestle with those issues. Iraq war is certainly one. The environment is another, injustice, poverty in Africa. Those are God's questions to us. And I'm glad to hear that you're wrestling with it, and I'm glad to hear that you're trying to come up with some answer to help this person. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Vivian, 1-300-40-2020. If you've got a question for our special guest tonight, Philip Yancey, and we'll take more of your calls and explore a little bit more of this guy's life in just a minute. This is Open House.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.